Good evening.
Good evening.
Son asked me.
Yes.
You're the only one on right now, so we'll just wait a few more minutes.
Okay, I'm going to go on mute for the meantime. Thank you.
Okay.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
We're starting on section 60, verse 324.
Okay.
And we'll start.
I got to listen to yesterday's recording, so that was good.
I'm sorry?
I was able to listen to the recording yesterday. You know, I had a board meeting, so I couldn't make the class. But I was able to hear the recording today. Very good,
good
class.
L'shem yichud kud shab richu ishkinte bid hilur himud hilur hilur himu. L'yachta l'shem yud he b'vav he b'yichud ashalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asof Torah mitzvah. Vayino amadonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu kananei aleinu maasei yadeinu kananeihu. Veha adam yada et hawa chava ishto vigomer rabbi abba patach mi yodea ruach b'nei ha'adam ha'ola ki yo lemala beruach Ha bechema, ha yoredet, hi yo, lemata laaretz, hai kira, kama kevavnin, it beya vehake, hu kol milo, dioraita kama kevavnin, V'kol chad v'chad v'kol ho ya'ut. And the man knew Eve, his wife. Rabbi Abba opened his discourse with, who knows whether the spirit of man goes upwards and the spirit of the beast goes downwards to the earth? This verse has many interpretations, and so it is with the words of Torah. Each and every word has many interpretations, and all are true. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Is the spirit of the beast the evil inclination?
Or that's one explanation. Another is that it's the animal within each human being.
Okay.
The body is an animal structure. So maybe that's the spirit of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
But both are possible, both are correct, and that's really what the verse is saying.
Mm-hmm.
There are many interpretations. As we know, the sages have said there's 70 interpretations of every word and every letter. And here the Zohar is telling us each and every interpretation is correct.
I think maybe is Brandy and Malka on the conference call?
I don't know about Malcolm, if somebody came on.
This is Malcolm.
Okay, Malcolm and is not.
Okay. The reason I said that is because in Hebrew class, we just were introduced in our chapter to Yodea as meaning know, like know, you know, in your head, K-N-O-W. And
yes.
I noticed that even in the Aramaic, new, it's still the same word. And
correct.
I didn't know it. I mean, I knew that that word was used with Adam and its relationship to Eve, and I just didn't know if they knew, so maybe they'd like to know that. And I thought it was interesting that the word is the same word in Hebrew as in Aramaic. In my version, it's the third to the last word on the first line.
What's the last word on the first line?
Yodea is the third to the last word. In other words, if you start on the left and count and go to the right, it's the third word on the first line. If you move from right to left, well, then I have to say.
I understand you're trying to describe it for people who are.
Yeah. So they can
reading.
Find it. Yeah.
The interesting part of this, if you look at the word Yodea, you have the yud that begins the word, which represents action. It also represents Hashem. The vav is the connecting letter. So one way of interpreting this is because the root, the shorish, is actually the last two letters. The first two letters are not part of the root. So yud means action or activity, and the vav is a connecting letter meaning and. So you have activity and knowledge or knowing. But another way of understanding that is if you permute the letters of the root of the shoresh, it becomes ayin dalet, which are the large letters in the Shema. And ayin dalet actually has the meaning of witness.
Right.
So knowledge is an active witness to connect to Zerantim, which is what the vav represents. These are different ways of understanding the letters and different ways of understanding the word. And the real question that people need to ask, if you look at this first verb, the verse in English, which is also in the Hebrew, in the Aramaic, and the man knew his wife Eve. The question is, why use the word knowledge? Why not use the word zavug for intercourse? And the man had intercourse with his wife. The man that was intimate with his wife. There are many different ways of expressing this. What is the purpose of using the word yodea? And we'll see in the Zohar that it will explain that the reason the word knowledge is used is to teach us what is the connection between two things in the physical world. Knowledge is the connection.
In other words, you come to know each other, not only sexually, but what would you say, mentally?
There are many different understanding of knowledge. Knowledge is the conscious mind. Knowledge is bina. Understanding. Can you understand without knowledge? Oh, I think they're arguing for this reason or that reason, but you don't really know. All you're doing is guessing. But when you know, you have connection. they're arguing because the budget is tight or whatever the purpose is. There's a lot in that verse, and the man knew his wife. There's a lot in this first verse in the Zohar as well, in this section. Verse 325. V'ha'keinun v'kaloraita mit parsha b'shav in antin l'kabel shavin sitrin v'shavin antin v'ha'kehu b'kal Mila umila dioraita the call my denafik me call mila umila kama kevavnin deit parshan minea le call citrine. The entire Torah can be interpreted in 70 different ways according to the 70 sides and the 70 aspects of Zeranpin. So each topic in the Torah, and whatever is derived from each topic, has many interpretations explained in all directions. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, it seems clear.
But then you have to ask the question, why not say 70 interpretations in the previous verse in the Pasuk? Why in this one? Why separate though that idea? To say there's many interpretations, but here you're saying specifically there are 70. Why is the Zohar doing that? And it says that there is the 70 aspects of Zeranpin, but there's only 6 Sefirot in Zeranpin. So 6 times 10 is 60. Where do the other 10 come from? Well, we know that Malchut is sometimes included in Zeranpin as a unification when they're in unity. So that's where the 70 comes from. So the 70 interpretations are really speaking about different Sefirot. And so every interpretation that we talk about, we are explaining something with respect to a Sefirah. But for most of us, we don't know which Sefirah we're connecting to when we do an interpretation on a particular word, or phrase, or verse. So there's much more than just it's clear as written. Yes, it is clear as written. And I agree with you. But there's always questions to ask.
Well, I knew that, but I thought the reason I said what I did was because you had just made the comment, 70 interpretations of every word and every letter, and we've heard that many, many times.
Right. And where does it come from? The Talmud says it, but the Talmud is getting it from the teachers, the people who wrote the Talmud. They're getting it from their teachers, and Rabbi Shimon got it from his teacher, and go all the way back to Moses, because somewhere in the oral law, the oral teachings, Moses said there's 70 interpretations. But I don't really like the word interpretation, because I think it demeans what is taking place. I would prefer the word there are 70 meanings. Because an interpretation is somebody's opinion. But a meaning as an aspect of a connection to a higher authority. That's just my personal opinion. 3:26.
Wait, I'm gonna ask if I can ask one more question that I just thought of.
Okay,
knowing the levels like Peshat and Ramez and Drash and Sod, would I have a tendency to sort of classify meanings or interpretations with those four levels? In doing so, would that also give you a hint to which Sephiroth would be involved in the meaning or interpretation?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Because the Peshat has 10 Sephiroth. The Remus has 10 Sephiroth. The Drash has 10 Sephiroth. And the Sod has 10 Sephiroth. Now, what is 4 times 10? 40.
Mm-hmm.
Is 40 a number that's significant in the Torah?
Yes. 40 years in the desert.
40 days of rain and for the flood.
Judgment.
Yes.
But with mercy, because it's water.
The 40th day of conception.
Yeah.
Father and the mother are supposed to be separated and not be intimate that day.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of meanings to the 40.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 3:26. Tachatzei kad barnash azil biorach kishot hu azel zimina liam shich aleya ruha kadisha ila ameela v'hai ruach salik biruta Kadisha leit achada leela ulit dabeka viktusha ilaa tilaita de minea. Come and see. When a man follows the path of truth, he keeps to the right and only attracts to himself a Holy Spirit from above. This spirit serves him as a holy desire to unite with the upper and to cleave unto the supernal sanctity so that it will never leave him. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, it's reminding me of direct light and returning light.
No, it may be, but I'm not sure it's talking about direct and returning light.
Well, when you're trying to stay on the right.
No, you're trying to stay on the path of truth. When you stay on the path of truth, the effect is to stay on the right. But is there truth on the left?
Sure. But I'm just looking at the phrase when I said that. When a man follows the path of truth, he keeps to the right. So I picked up the phrase to the right because that was before my eyes. But I knew that it's the path of truth that we're following, or at least we want to follow. But
where is truth in the Sephiroth?
In all of them.
Usually the code word truth is referring to a level of Zeranpin. And actually, it's more associated with with Tiferet.
Which is metal column.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So, is the Zohar misleading us? Is it asking us to think for ourselves and question what it's saying? Because many times the sages, when they wrote, would make specific mistakes to trap the students so that the person who was unprepared would not understand what they were writing. I've mentioned that before.
Mm-hmm. And I used to make mistakes on purpose sometimes with the children, just to see if they would, catch my mistake.
It's exactly the same idea. That's what the sages were doing.
Hello.
Yes,
I know. Is that like the missing nun in the ashray, kind of? Is that what you're kind of talking about?
No, the missing nun has a specific purpose.
Okay.
In the ashray, it's following the order of the Aleph Bet, and it's skipping the nun on purpose so that it will... Because the nun has an energy associated with nephal, which means to fall. And if you're talking about ashray, which is praising God, you don't want to fall. So you don't want that energy connected to praise.
I was just asking about the... Oh.
It's a very conscious decision not to have the nun. But here is the question, is it the path of truth bringing you to the right? Or is it the path of truth in the central column, which is to the right of the negative system? I hope I was clear on Esther.
Thank you.
Verse 327. Olekad barna shazil biorach biish v'sate orcho hu imshich aleya ruach nesava pelistarsh semala v'saiv leya. Feast of Bea, Gada Avilo Titam U. Bahem Venit Behem Matem Bam Atal Ista Avamasavin Lea. However, when man walks on a path of evil and veers off the correct path, the right path, he draws upon himself from the left side a spirit of uncleanliness. This spirit defiles him, and he becomes unclean because of it. Hence it is written, and you shall not make yourselves unclean with them, nor be defiled by them. Because he who defiles himself is led further into defilement. Questions, comments, thoughts. What is the verse actually saying? It's saying if you do an action that connects you to the left side, you draw a spirit that's going to strengthen your Yetzer Hara, your evil inclination, and you're going to go after that negative action, that mistake, and do another one. Does that make sense, logical?
I think it does. But I'm also thinking, you know, we say the reward of a mitzvah is another mitzvah. And so the reward of a negative action is another negative action.
Yes, and that's what the verse is saying. But does it really make sense in a world of mixture? This is a world of mixture, isn't it? You don't know what's right or what's a mistake.
Well, I was more thinking along the lines of someone going off into, what would you say, voodoo, stuff like that. You know, the negative side.
Somebody is following voodoo. We'll use that as an example. You start to learn with a practitioner of voodoo about spiritual laws, and it's not silly. They're using the same system that we use.
Well, I guess the reason I thought of that was because a friend of mine told me she had gone to New Orleans and had gone to, a voodoo person to have her palm read. I probably shouldn't label that one like that. Anyway, she wanted to go in for reading. And the reason she told me was she handed me this little scrap of paper because the woman who did whatever she did, told her whatever she told her, on that piece of paper, I have it in my purse, she gave her a book to read, and it was a Jewish book written by, I don't remember the name now, because it's still in my purse, because I was going to look up about the book, and I never did, and I just thought it was very strange that this person gave a Christian lady a Jewish book by a well-known Jewish author. It didn't make sense. And that's, I'm sorry, that's what's coming to my mind as we're doing this. So,
does it make sense that if you study Buddhism for 25 years and you were born as a Jewish person, that your teachers will tell you, now that you've reached this level, you have a choice to make. You can remain in this level, and you will have to reincarnate as a Jew and study the material as a Jew, because you can't go higher in Buddhism, but you can go higher in the frame of Kabbalah. Or you can choose to go back and find a teacher who will teach you Kabbalah. And that is consistent. It's a story that is told by many of the American Buddhists. It's a story that's told by many who have studied Buddhism for many, many years. Because the rabbis didn't know Kabbalah, and they didn't make it available to various people, and so they went searching for truth elsewhere, and they found it in Buddhism, and they continued to study it for 20, 25 years, and that's when their teachers would tell them, it's time to go back to Judaism, where you can remain here and reincarnate, but you'll have to go back in the next lifetime. Your choice.
Well, see, I realized she gave me that piece of paper with that the author's name and the book, and I've never done anything about it. So for me, I need to do that to be able to give back to her this information about this book. So that's probably what I need to do. is bringing to my memory, because it was several months back that she handed me that paper.
Hanuk, Malka.
Yes, Malka.
So you're saying voodooism is we're talking about the energy of it, is why they were attracted to that study?
I want to be clear that it wasn't that they were studying voodoo, they were studying Buddhism. B-U-H.
Oh, B-U-H. Okay. I was B-U-H. Hearing B. Okay,
Buddhism.
Okay. Okay. I was shaking my head. I was like.
Yeah. But we had mentioned earlier that Buddhism, voodoo, with a V as in Victor, is also using the same spiritual laws, same spiritual system. But it's not a positive approach.
Okay. But I kept hearing voodooism with a V, but it,
yes.
You're talking D. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the reason they Buddhism is because of the energy that's connected to it, or is it the spiritual realm that they were attracted to?
I wasn't sure if you were asking about voodoo with a V or Buddhism with a B.
With a B. A B.
Okay.
As in boy. B.
Okay. If you go back to the children who were born shortly after the war, and they reincarnating, and most of them died, if not all of them died in the Shoah, in the Holocaust. So now they're in America, and you know they studied Kabbalah in their pre-war lives as Orthodox Jews, or maybe even they studied it as Reformed Jews in that period. We don't really know. But they came into these various Jewish families, and they went to the Reform synagogues, they went to the conservative synagogues. There were very few Orthodox synagogues, but even if they went to the Orthodox synagogues, and they were curious. They had this earlier lifetime where they were studying Kabbalah, and they went searching, and they asked their rabbi, I want to study. And sometimes they knew the term Kabbalah, they'd heard it somewhere, or they just showed up in their mind. And sometimes they just said, I want to talk about reincarnation, or I want to talk about astrology, or I want to talk about meditation. And their rabbis poo-pooed it. Their rabbis wouldn't teach it. Rabbis wouldn't direct them to another rabbi who would have taught them. To going in the 50s and 60s and 70s, all of these people were hungry for this information, but the rabbis weren't willing to open it up to them for various reasons having to do with the tikkun of those people. And they chose to find that information in the Eastern religions, Buddhism being the most prevalent. And if you know anything about Buddhism in this world, in America today, they refer to themselves as Jubus, Jewish Buddhists. And I heard one statistic said 70% of them, the American Buddhists, have Jewish background. But in those days, the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s, they couldn't find Kabbalah. They couldn't find anybody to talk to them about meditation except a Buddhist. They couldn't find anybody to teach. Even yoga was a little bit strange up until the 80s. And it still is recommended not to do yoga as a Jewish soul even today. But the approach was very much there. And these people literally were studying for 20, 25 years when their teacher said, oh, it's time to go back to Judaism. That's where you will be able to further your growth. We can't teach you anymore. You can't go any higher in Buddhism. Because Buddhism did not have the whole perception. It's not a complete structure. It's based on a human being. It's not based on Hashem.
Wow. So how does that affect their cocoon? I mean, they did this for 25 years. Did it draw down their energy, as in their soul elevation?
They got information. Did it draw their soul down? Did they fall spiritually? They were following a path that wasn't right for their soul. But they gained information. They gained some aspects of wisdom. And that was their tikkun, to have to struggle to find the truth. And for them, the truth is in Kabbalah, not in Buddhism. And that's not to say that there are other people whose truth is in Buddhism. Just as there are people whose truth is found in Christianity, and others whose truth is found in Muslim.
And why did the rabbis that did know Kabbalah, and why didn't they teach it at that point, back in the 50s, 60s? Because
they were making, first off, most of the rabbis in America were not taught Kabbalah. And then when it started to be taught in the 80s and 90s, it was being taught to compete with the likes of the Kabbalah Center, who was opening up and saying, we'll teach anybody. But that essentially was the, it was a tikkun for these souls who were hungry for this knowledge, but there was no way to find it within the frame of traditional Judaism as they understood it. And the rabbis didn't know it themselves, and they had, many of them didn't know where to direct these students. So they poo-pooed it, they pushed it away. I have many students who have told me stories like that.
Oh.
But then they found, in the 90s, they found an outlet. They found a place they could learn. And that caused others to start to teach Kabbalah. But again, they don't teach experiential Kabbalah. They teach academic Kabbalah, which was essentially started by Gershom Scholem.
What's the difference between the two?
There's actually three forms. But experiential Kabbalah is you're given the tools and told to use that in meditation and told to use the tools in your life and bring it into practice. That's experiential Kabbalah. That's what I teach. The academic Kabbalah is what you can go to all the universities today in the departments of Judaism on the academics campuses, and they will be teaching and writing and researching the whole aspect of Kabbalah from the writings of the sages, but they never do them. It never doesn't impact their life. You can have some atheists who are actually teaching Kabbalah in the universities. I'm not criticizing an atheist. It's just their path. So that's the primary difference. And then the third category is what we call practical Kabbalah, and that deals with the magical side of Kabbalah, where it's fooling people. It's considered a negative approach because somebody goes to a rabbi or goes to a practical Kabbalist and says, "Give me a talisman to protect me from XYZ." And this person writes Hebrew phrases from the Torah and says, "Here," to the person, "here's your idol, here's your protection shield, just hold on to this, put it around your neck, put it in your purse, keep it close to you and it will protect you." It doesn't tell them to do the work. And so that's why the sages in the last 500 years have said, don't do this. Because it's become an idol. It's not become a tool. And there's a fine line between, you know, what I teach, because some of my students will take the 72 names of God as an idol. I have to scan it every morning. Because that's how I protect myself. Is that a tool, or has that become an idol?
I think it's an idol.
For some, it's an idol. For some, it's a tool, and it's a question of consciousness. I think I've given you enough to think about today.
I think so.
You all have a good evening, and we'll have a Tikkuni Zohar class at 7 o'clock West Coast time.
Thank you.
Thank you.